Emerging technologies are transforming the healthcare industry as we know it. Investors, say hello to HTEC, a portfolio dedicated to capturing the significant growth potential of healthcare innovation. Learn more at roboglobal.com/HTEC.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. It is that time of night. My name is Rich Bradbury.
And I'm Madeline Chung.
We are joined in the studio this evening by Tunku Halim. He's an academic, he's a fiction and non-fiction writer. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
Right, where do I start? You're a lawyer. You were living in Australia for a while, trained in the UK. Now you're back here writing children's encyclopedias and horror stories.
Yes.
It's quite a transition.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, the first thing is I'm not actually here at the moment.
This is true.
Yeah. I'm traveling around for a bit.
Right.
I lived in Australia for 20 years.
Ah.
I was last year I spent most of my time in Chiang Mai.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And so right now I tell everyone I'm homeless.
But in a good way.
It's because you're traveling around a lot.
That's right. So it's a good excuse to travel.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, clearly you've traveled a lot. Where would you say of the places that you've been to you feel really comfortable?
Well, I really like Chiang Mai.
Right.
Number one, it's so close to KL. You know,
yeah.
It's only about a 2.5 hour flight.
Yeah.
Very safe. People are very nice.
Yeah.
And it's the cost of living is really low.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I like it very much.
Compared to KL right now, which is not the lowest, right?
No, it's not.
So would you say traveling to so many places that you've been that gives you inspiration, in writing?
That's a good question. Well, actually, inspiration can come from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just being here with you guys is inspiring.
Right.
Really?
Oh, he's so polite already.
I know.
Right? Well, I mean, what was it then that kind of got the ball rolling, if you like, to sit down and put pen to paper or ink to paper, rather?
Yeah, well, actually, that started in school.
Right.
I used to write poetry as a teenager.
Mm.
You know, teenage angst and just love and all that sort of stuff. So, I wrote poetry and then I stopped. Started working and then I had this PC and I thought, I want to write something. You know, it's got this word processing program. I want to try it out. And I started writing a story.
Wow.
What was the first story?
As simple as that.
Yeah. My first story was, it was called Banking Hours. It was about Jalan Damansara.
Uh-huh.
It used to be, back then it wasn't a highway. It was just a two-lane road going through the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And, there were stories about Pontianaks there. And I thought, I'll write about this road.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how the whole kind of horror thing started,
exactly.
Was it?
Exactly.
Right.
Yes,
I mean, this has always fascinated me with Malaysians in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I speak to people and they talk about the Pontianak and they talk about the Oily Man and, all of these wonderful stories that I hear about. And there is this sense that, in many other places, these kind of stories would have faded into mythology. They would have become something that becomes background talk that your grandma spoke about or your great-grandmother spoke about. But some of these stories, they're still around.
Yes.
And people still talk about these things as though they are real and relevant.
Absolutely.
What is it that keeps it so real, do you think?
Well, because it's real.
Have you encountered any before?
Oh, no, that's a trade secret.
Can I?
Yeah,
right, okay.
But the thing is, Malaysians are very superstitious.
Yeah.
I was in the UK and Australia. If I walk down a dark lane, I'm not afraid of ghosts.
Right.
But in Malaysia, yes.
Right.
Mm. Maybe it's because we all believe.
Right.
Mm.
And that makes all the difference.
Yeah, I think that's what it is,
Yeah.
I mean, I come from a skeptical family, but I also come from a family that is open and willing to discuss these kind of things, And so when I went home a couple of times at Christmas and I'm talking about these spirits and whatever that are here in Malaysia, it's one of those things where, friends and family, people still believe that.
Mm.
But I think it's about where we are for a start, this part of the world, and there's an awful lot of jungle and there's places that are unexplored and there's noises you can't explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this becomes something that is really kind of,
Well, sometimes you wouldn't believe until you experience it yourself.
This is
right?
it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or someone close to you has experienced it.
Yeah. And the stories that they tell you, it just feels so surreal and it just freaks you out. I mean, that's why I don't really like horror stories. I mean, I've experienced a fair bit as well, even at home now, you know. Mm. And, you know, when grandma tells you, like, you know, all these stories back home and, you know, and her experiences, and even my dad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, really? Really? Mm. And until, you know, the person really explains to you every bit.
And it's somebody you trust, and it's somebody you know.
Yeah.
Right?
If it's a stranger, you'd be like, yeah, you must be fake. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if it's someone you really know, you might be like, wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, let's take a short break and come back and kind of wax lyrical on that when we come back. Because, interesting stuff. Okay, we are having a giveaway this evening. It's one free meal from our friends over at The Good Batch. All you have to do is answer this question for us.
Now, Tunku Halim's best-selling anthology is called... Send your name and your IC number to 01620019000. Don't forget to tell us what you deserve to win as well.
We'll be back after these messages. Please do not go anywhere. You're listening to That Time of Night here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station. BFM 89.9 at The Business Station. It is That Time of Night. My name is Rich Bradbury.
And I'm Adeline Chu.
And with us right now we have...
Tunku Halim.
He's with us all the way through until 9 p.m. this evening. We'll be talking about ghosts and spookiness and children's encyclopedias and all kinds of stuff. Please do not go anywhere. It's going to be really interesting. Before we get to that, a reminder of our giveaway. We are giving away a free meal from our friends over at The Good Batch. All you have to do is answer this question.
Now tell us, what is Tunku Halim's best-selling anthology called? Send your name and your IC number to 01620019000. Don't forget to tell us what you deserve to win as well.
Now then, so we kind of... touched on the subject of ghosts and spirits and whatever. What was it really, though, that kind of made you want to talk about spirits, horror in general? You know, why?
Why do I write that sort of stuff? Yeah. Well, you know, Stephen King has a very good answer. Mm. And his answer is, what makes you think I have a choice?
Right. Mm.
It's because when I start writing, it always goes in that direction.
Right.
The paranormal, fear, darkness... Mm. Gothic type stories.
Right.
It goes in that direction. I can't help it.
Right. Mm-hmm. It just comes out.
Yes, it just comes out.
How much of that, though, was, I don't know, you know, your childhood, you know, where you grew up, anything like that, that kind of is kind of sat there somewhere?
Well, I know as a teenager, I loved reading horror stories.
Right, yeah, me too.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
But today I don't.
Right.
You know? So it might have come from there, but I know that everyone I talk to is interested in spooky stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just grabs you.
Yeah.
And it grabs me too. And that's why I love writing that stuff.
I love listening to spooky stuff, but I don't like watching spooky stuff. Horror movies, I don't like.
It's the same with me. I can't watch a horror
movie. Oh, you too?
Really?
Yes.
You're writing the damn things.
I know.
I mean, do you? Would you see your stuff put into film? Is that something you'd like to see?
Yeah, that would be good, actually. I have collaborated on a movie script, actually, called Kyoto Kitchen.
Oh.
And right now, I think we're looking at financing. And I'm not getting involved in the business part of it.
Right.
Just the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just the creative side.
Yeah.
Stay away from the business.
Exactly.
Everybody knows how messy that can get. Okay, well, let's move away from the kind of horror stuff, though, and look at the children's history of Malaysia that you authored, and the children's encyclopedia. Very different direction from the stuff that you normally do. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to do that? I mean, I love the idea behind it, and I think growing up for me, an encyclopedia was one of the most wonderful things that I had as a child. And it was a series of encyclopedia. It was the Encyclopedia Britannica, the whole collection. Leather bound, still looks wonderful. But, you know, it was one of those things where I would pick it up and I'd pick a random page and there'd be something interesting.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the idea behind it?
Yes, that's the idea behind the encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Well, what actually got me involved in Malaysian history was my dad, or my late dad, asked me to write his biography.
Right.
And I wrote that in the late 90s. Mm. As I did that, I wanted to research history of the family, of all the time when he was growing up. The Second World War, and I found it fascinating. I said, Malaysian history is so fascinating, but when I was studying it in school, it was so boring,
right?
You know, and I said, wow, this is so interesting. I'd like to write some. You know, I'd like to impart this knowledge, which most Malaysians don't have. Then I came across a book by Charles Dickens, A Child's History of England.
Right,
it's called. I said to myself, oh, I am going to write a very similar book.
Right.
So I tell the history of Malaysia as a story with no dates.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it keeps people interested. There's,
yep.
I see. Yep. Now, I mean, the problem with history, as we all know, is that it can be controversial.
Mm-hmm.
How did you decide in which direction to kind of go?
I stay out of the controversy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Write the most accepted version of history, the ones that all the academics agree.
Right. Yes. Right. 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 Yes. But that must have been fun, though, right?
It was fun, but it was also challenging.
Yeah.
Writing in a simple way for kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I followed that up with an encyclopedia. I thought, well, it'd be nice to have some illustrations, some maps and some photos in it. And so I started that project. If I'd known then it'd take me 5 years,
right.
I wouldn't have started.
But I mean, writing's not something you get an instant gratification from,
that's right?
Right.
A lot of the work was photography, photo editing, the design. Graphic design.
All done by yourself.
I did everything.
Wow.
So, yeah, if I'd known it'd take me all that effort, I wouldn't have started.
So you're definitely a kind of in for a penny, in for a pound kind of guy,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You do the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I like that because, one, it gives you complete control of the product that you're finishing.
Yeah.
You know, and you get that sense of real achievement of having everything from start to finish.
Absolutely.
So when you sit down to start your next novel or whenever, do you have like a specific process? Because, for example, you know, some authors will write longhand with a pencil on a certain pad with a certain pencil, you know. Do you have anything like that? Or is it just, no, I'm going to sit down, a few hours here, a few hours there?
I pretty much freewheel.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. It's 5 minutes here, 2 hours there.
Right.
Days spent not
writing. Coffee shop here.
Yeah, yeah. Days spent not writing, you know.
I mean, do you ever get that sense of, I've not done enough today, though, and I need to do more?
I used to.
Right.
When I first became a full-time writer, I really felt, I've got to put the get the pages written, you know. I put a lot of pressure on myself, which really wasn't a good thing to do.
Mm.
But now I'm much more relaxed about it.
It just comes.
Yeah, yeah.
So writer's block, how would you get over that?
Don't
apart from taking off the Chiang Mai.
Don't write.
Don't write. If only it was that easy. Right. I mean, so we looked at Dark Demon Rising, nominated for the 1999 International IMPAC in Dublin, Impact. You got all kinds of stuff, you know, Blood Haze, 15 Chilling Tales. What's next then? What have you got coming up?
Well,
next?
I'm working on a collection of short stories.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everyone I'm a slow writer,
right.
So I take my time and enjoy the process.
Mm.
I don't put pressure on myself to write quickly,
right?
Or to come out with the stories. There might be horror stories too that's being talked about. So you know, I look forward to that. That again is taking my all the stories and compiling them as a best of.
Aha.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Right. So is horror where you feel comfortable? Is that home for you?
Home is where the darkness is.
Right.
Mm. It doesn't have to be horror.
Right.
Horror is about fear.
Mm.
So you could have a crime story and have the element of fear where you have a serial killer, for instance.
Mm.
Or a movie like Alien, where it's sci-fi.
Great
yeah,
film.
And that's horror.
Yeah.
I use the paranormal to tell a story.
Mm.
So my new novel, A Malaysian Restaurant in London, involves the paranormal, but it's not, there's no fear.
Mm.
There is actually love, and it's a thoughtful book.
Right.
So yes, I don't always write horror.
But how much of the material that you write is drawn from personal experience?
Well, I put part of myself in all my stories,
right.
All my novels.
Mm.
Some of it is, yes. I can't tell you.
I tried to do
that's
it.
That's fine. That's fine. Wow, that's really interesting because I'm always trying to understand the mind of a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I've attempted, you know, and my brother has attempted, and, you know, we have family members who've tried unsuccessfully. And I think, is it just about perseverance, though? Just writing and writing and writing and just keep doing it.
Exactly. It's like playing the piano.
Mm.
If you want to get good at playing the piano, you've got to practice, right?
Mm.
So it's the same with writing.
Mm.
Also, you know, there's lots of resources on the internet and books on how to write creatively.
Mm.
So you do need to practice.
That's it then.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to take a short break, folks. Quick announcement again. 016-201-9000 is the number to remember if you want to take part in the giveaway. What are we giving away, Adeline?
Well, we're giving away a free meal from the Good Batch. Now, if you want to win, just answer this question. Tell us, what is Tunku Halim's best-selling anthology called? Send your name and your IC number to 016-201-9000. Don't forget to tell us what you deserve to win as well.
We'll be right back after these messages. We have news from Page 2 coming up and, of course, Smarty Pants. Do not go anywhere. It is that time of night here on BFM 89.9, the business station. BFM 89.9, the business station. It is that time of night. I'm Rich Bradbury.
And I'm Adeline Chung.
We are in the studio with Tunku Halim. He's going to be with us all the way through until 9 p.m. this evening. We've got Smarty Pants coming up, of course. We're going to be doing news from Page 2 in a moment. Some really interesting stories tonight. We're talking about poop, we're talking about Uber, and we're talking about earpieces. All in the same segment. Yeah, right? Don't go anywhere. So before we do that, we have a giveaway. 016-201-9000. We are giving away one free meal, courtesy of the Good Batch. Answer this question for us.
Tell us, what is Tunku Halim's best-selling anthology called? Send your name and your IC number to 016-201-9000. Don't forget to tell us what you deserve to win as well.
Okay, let's move on. We have a little bit of news from Page 2, and it sounds like this.
Extra, extra, beat all about.
What's all the shouting?
Now then.
You first.
Me first. Ever since I was a young boy, so millennia ago, I've always been fascinated with language, right? And people who have this uncanny ability to be able to speak multiple languages. Malaysians, for example, you know, is something I'm particularly jealous of. You guys can, most of you can speak at least three languages of some sort. And coming from England, where most of us only speak one language at best, you know, I find it fascinating. And so we at school are often given the choice to learn either French or German or Spanish or something like that.
Did you?
Yeah, I learned French and German when I was a secondary school. And now imagine the ability to be able to speak any language that you wanted just by wearing an earpiece, right? Now, this sounds like something out of Star Trek, out of Star Wars, and we've been there's been a few ideas behind this. There's a few apps that have been around to do this kind of stuff. Now, this company, they are calling themselves The Pilot, and they are set to launch an earpiece. So you put one part of it in your ear, and then the person who speaks the language that you don't puts it in their ear too. And there's microphones in them as well. And so using an app, they speak, the app translates it, and then puts it out to your headphones.
The app is via your mobile phone?
Correct.
Okay.
So it translates on the fly. And then into audio, so you can actually hear almost what the other person is saying. So it's like a Google Translate, but in real time. Do we like this idea?
It is. It's great. I mean, like, do they have to be at the same place together?
They have to, of course, yeah. You have to be close to one another to be able to do this. But, I mean, the idea behind it is, you know, you're passing somebody else a headphone, and they pop it in their ear. It's a great idea. I mean, something like this, the development of this and it being available sometime within my lifetime is incredible.
There's
you know?
No language barrier.
No then. Language barrier.
Except for mistranslation.
That's the thing,
that
right?
problem.
And that's what that was what I was going to get talking to. I mean, we know if Cantonese, for example, has how many tones? Six tones. You know, Mandarin has four tones.
Like
Vietnamese, I think, has something like five or six as well. I mean, this is what worries me about the translations that are coming through this device. You know, they could be slightly skewed. But I think in the end of it, you could end up with either somebody laughing their head off because the translation is terrible, or just being entirely insulted by something that you've said.
Yeah, if for example, if you want to, you know, speak in Cantonese or maybe Mandarin, and if you don't understand, so if the translator is going to translate for you, and if it's someone from America or from the UK that is doing the translation,
right.
They can't say it properly in Chinese.
No, I understand. But imagine those times that, you know, you're in a market in Hong Kong or you're in a market in Beijing and, you know, the lady has already got an earpiece in. You've got your phone with you. You know, just imagine how much time you would save haggling. You know, because they would know straight away, no, too expensive. And she'd know.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, if you have the device, when you want to translate something, you got to give the other device to another person, right?
Right.
So how would you convince the other person to actually wear that? That's another problem.
Exactly. Right. But I think the kind of idea behind it is that at some point, everybody will have one of these earpieces.
Yeah, but how much does it cost?
I don't know. But if we kind of, you know, push it out far and wide enough, Just imagine the benefits that this could have eventually. I mean, we don't want to see the death of language, but it would be nice if people could have their own language. And it's definitely a Star Trek-y kind of thing, right?
Okay. It's quite cool, pretty cool.
I'm geeking out with this. Okay, Tunku Halim, you had an interesting story, right?
Yes, I lived in Tasmania for 10 years.
Wow.
And
you just wanted to go to the furthest place away from everybody, right?
Absolutely, yes, to get away as far from Malaysia as possible. But down there right now, we've got a museum called the Museum of New and Modern Art, I think it's called, MONA. Mm. And it was started by David Walsh, who is a professional gambler.
Okay. Mm.
And he's made so much money from gambling that he started a winery, as well as an art gallery.
In Tasmania.
In Tasmania. It's become the major tourist draw card in Tasmania now. Mm. And one of the featured art installations is called, I don't know what it's called exactly, but we call it the poop machine.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yes. So what happens basically, you feed in food into the machine and it will go through the digestion process.
Oh,
yes,
that's cool.
The digestion process. So you can see each stage of digestion. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I think it gets fed about 2 o'clock every day. And probably about 5 o'clock, it starts pooing and you see the poo coming out.
Wow.
And you smell it.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
But that's fascinating. You know, you can actually watch the digestion process as it's happening.
Yep.
Wow.
And so it's mimicking digestion of animals and humans, of course, obviously.
Right.
So it's just fascinating that an artist would want to create this machine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
But it's one of those things where you're going to get kids who, first, anything that's smelly, you know, kids will love, first and foremost.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a lot of ewes, but they're going to want to watch the process behind it, right?
Yeah.
Something like that would have fascinated me as a kid, you know, being able to see that and understand it and watch the actual process.
But do they identify, like, what you eat, what you poop?
You are what you poop or are what you eat?
You are what you
eat. You have the poop dictionary, right?
Well, you know... The poop is smelly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm mostly vegetarian.
Mm.
And since I became vegetarian about, 4 years ago, but now I eat seafood now, just to be, so it's just more flexible when you're out with friends. You know, you're not restricted to vegetarian food. But I find when I fart, that it's not as smelly as before.
Tunku Halim is speaking about farting.
I know.
So they must be feeding this machine some meat for it to be so smelly.
Right. That must be it. Yeah, that must be it. You see, in my mind, and I've always been convinced that vegetarians had the smelliest farts ever.
Why do you think that vegetarians had the smelliest farts?
Because I once used to date a vegetarian girl.
Believe
me, I have intimate knowledge.
Did you?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Okay, moving away from poop. Let's move away from poop.
All right.
Quickly.
I'm going to be talking about Uber, as we all use Uber quite a fair bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now this story is in Pittsburgh. Now, so Uber will be introducing its first self-driving car on streets. So
in the same way that Google have been doing it for a while.
Yeah, pretty much. So actually, the self-driving Ford Fusion Hybrid, they will come equipped with sensors developed by Uber's technology.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that they have laser scanners, radars, high-resolution cameras to collect mapping data. So you have a normal car. So right above the car, there's this huge camera.
Okay.
Yeah, it actually directs, you know, it's a sensor.
Okay.
And they say that, you know, I mean, as we all know, I mean, if it's a self-driving car, you know, so the car will be automated, right? So this autonomous car, a human, which is a driver, will be seated at a driving spot. Driver's seat.
Doing what? Just like with
just
hands off the wheel kind of thing?
No, just to monitor the car.
Oh, okay.
Just
so
to monitor
it's
the
a
car.
Safety... The human is a safety feature.
Yes, correct.
Just to make sure it's all working.
But think about it. I mean, sooner or later, they wouldn't need... Why do you need a self-driving car? So sooner or later, you wouldn't need an Uber driver.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? Uber drivers be out of job.
Well, it means a lot of people will be out of a lot of jobs. You know, I mean, we're talking about machines that can poop for us.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you know...
It's like everything is robot
a device that can translate for us. Yeah. Pretty soon, we are going to be out of a job. You know, I mean... Yes, we will. I mean, we talk about this in jest. But, I mean, this idea, I mean... I think people like the idea of kind of being driven around by nothing almost, you know, by a machine. There's going to be a little bit of, oh, this is cool. Mm-hmm. But I think at some stage, we're going to want to go back to being in control of those vehicles.
We're not in Jetson's life, you know.
Not yet, we're not.
Not yet. But I don't think it's a good idea to actually, you know, have a self-driving car.
Why not? Why?
Well, I mean, like, number one, everybody loves driving.
Right.
I was surprised because when I spoke to a lot of Uber drivers and I said, why do you like to drive for Uber? And they said, I just love driving. And most of them are retired, you know, they have nothing to do. As they're driving, it kind of like generates, it works their mind. Yes.
So they have something to do.
Mm. Yeah, they have something to do. And even so, I myself, I love driving because you can stroll around and, you know, it's just something to take your mind off sometimes, you know. Mm. So yeah, I don't see a reason why do you need, I mean, unless you're rich enough, you have a driver, you don't have to drive most of the time.
But do you love parking?
Oh, I love parking.
Do you?
I do. I do.
You are some kind of masochist, I swear.
I do. But okay, recently I drove the Mercedes and you can self-park. I'm like, what is this?
Just take your hands off the wheel and it parks itself.
Yeah, your feet just got to be on a pedal, that's it. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, this is feature, self-park. Yeah. I'm like,
but that's if you find a parking spot, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's when you actually get the sensor to, you know, spot a parking
spot. Okay, okay. Good chat. Right, we're going to move on now. We're going to test your brains, Tunku Halim. Yes. We have this little thing that we call Smarty Pants. It sounds like this.
Smarty Pants.
Okay, so the idea behind this is that you have 3 minutes to answer as many general knowledge questions as you can. If you don't know the answer, say skip and we move along. Our current top score is 27 out of 30. Mm-hmm. So if I read pretty quick, we can get through most of these questions, okay? Mm. So your 3 minutes start now. The Piazza Navona is in which European city? Is it Rome or Minsk?
Minsk.
It's in Rome. An ideal what is the play in 1895 by Oscar Wilde? Husband or life?
Husband.
The Cold War mainly involved which two countries? Russia and America or America and the Ukraine?
Russia and America.
Correct. Ranidophobia is the irrational fear of what? Rain or frogs?
Frogs.
Correct. Which sport is the subject of the 1992 film The Mighty Ducks? Is it basketball or ice hockey?
Ice hockey.
A sapsucker is what kind of bird? A hummingbird or a woodpecker?
Hummingbird.
It's a woodpecker. The port indicates which side of a ship?
Left.
Correct. What is a group of ferrets called? A business or a flock?
Business.
Fictional character Cruella de Vil is associated with which breed of dog? Dalmatian or
Dalmatians.
Collie? Correct. Who sang Space Oddity in 19...
David Bowie.
Correct. Which 1986 Nintendo game is set in the fantasy world of Hyrule and centers on a boy named Link? The Legend of Zelda or Tales of Phantasia?
Zelda.
Correct. How many furlongs are in a mile? 9 or 8?
8.
Foot volley, a variation of football, originated in which country? Brazil or England?
Brazil.
What is the head of a jellyfish called? A bell or a head?
Head.
In cooking, what is calamari, squid or fish?
Squid.
Royal Gala is a variety of which fruit, apple or durian?
Apple.
Which female singer starred as Astrid Peth in the 2007 Doctor Who Christmas special? Kylie Minogue or Amy Lee?
Amy Lee.
Kylie Minogue. How many blocks are in a traditional game of Jenga, 54 or 44?
54.
Which alcoholic drink is known as the Green Fairy, absinthe or shamrock juice?
Absinthe.
What is a baby skunk called, a kit or a kitten?
A kit.
How many balls are in a game of 8-ball pool, 8 or 15?
15.
What is the medical term for the shoulder blade, clavicle or scapula?
Clavicle.
Mount Catherine is found in which country in Africa, Egypt or Sudan?
Sudan.
It's Egypt. The Internationals is a tournament for which competitive video game, League of Legends or Dota 2?
League of Legends.
Actor Pierce Brosnan made his screen debut in which gangster film, The Goodfellas or The Long Good Friday?
Long Good Friday.
Which term means doing something repetitively again and again and again? Groundhog Day or Deja Vu?
Groundhog Day.
What is usually kept in an alabastrum, perfume or olive oil?
Perfume.
What animal is known as the earth pig, a boar or an aardvark?
Aardvark.
How many points does the letter Z carry in a game of Scrabble, 10 or 9?
9.
10. What type of creature is a pintail? A donkey or a duck?
A duck.
Well done. We finally managed to get through all 30 questions. That does not happen very often. We'll be right back after these messages to find out how well Tunku Halim did. You are listening to That Time of Night here on BFM 89.9, the business station. BFM 89.9, the business station. It is That Time of Night. My name is Rich Bradbury.
And I'm Adeline Chu.
We're joined in the studio today by
Tunku Halim.
He's with us all the way through until 9 p.m. this evening. We have not scared him off with Smarty Pants. He managed to get through all 30 questions. How often does that happen?
Not very,
not very often at all, right? Right, before we get to find out how well he did, let's go and tell you that we have a giveaway this evening. 016-201-9000.
We are giving away we're giving away one free meal from our friends at The Good Batch. Now, if you want to win, just answer this question. Tell us, what is Tunku Halim's best-selling anthology called? Send your name and your IC number to 016-201-9000. Don't forget to tell us what it is of to win as well.
Right then, as we mentioned, we got through all 30 questions. Very rare. So let's find out which ones you got wrong first.
All right, so the first one, the Piazza Navona is in which European city? Is in Rome. A sapsucker is what kind of bird? Is woodpecker. What is the head of a jellyfish called? Which is a bell.
Ding ding.
What is the medical term of the shoulder blade? Is scapula. Mount Catherine is found in which country in Africa? Is Egypt.
Is that it?
Yep.
Oh my word. Here we go then.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tunku Halim scored 23 points.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Thank you.
Puts you up towards the top of the table. Wow. You're in good company up there. Thank you very much, first of all, for coming in.
Pleasure.
Absolute pleasure meeting you and having a good old chat. Next time you nomad your way through here, please do give us a knock.
Sure.
Where to next? I want to ask.
Off to Europe.
Oh,
yes.
Where to?
Which part?
Vienna, Prague, and Berlin.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Jealous.
I have a friend who's currently living in Vienna. He loves it.
Okay.
But he speaks no German right now. So he's kind of feeling a little bit out of sorts.
Anyway, maybe he needs a translator.
That's it.
Yeah.
We'll buy him an earpiece. Right. To wrap up the show then, we have some silly facts that we'd like to share. Adeline, would you like to go first?
Yeah, did you know?
I didn't.
There is a persistent storm at Lake Maracaibo, which is in Venezuela. Now, lightning storms occurs for about 10 hours a night, 140 to 160 nights a year, for a total of about 1.2 million lightning discharges per year.
Per year?
Per year.
Over this one lake?
Yep.
That sounds fascinating and terrifying.
Million. It is. They you don't want to live there. You don't want to live there.
I'm guessing they don't have fishermen on that lake.
I bet not.
Okay, did you know that Chinese judges in the 15th century used to wear darkened glasses, like sunglasses, to hide their facial expressions in court when they were delivering the death sentence?
Really?
Yeah.
I need to find a picture of that.
Right, so it's the 15th century. There might be a sketch.
You never know.
Anyway, that has been That Time of Night. This has been Tunku Halim. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
Say goodnight, and that's it. We're done.
Oh, no, we got to tell the answer.
Oh, yes, of course we do. We asked you a question. What was the name of Tunku Halim's best-selling anthology? What was it called?
Horror Story.
There we go. If you answered correctly, you will be hearing from us in the next few minutes. Thank you very much for listening. It has been That Time of Night here in BFM 89.9, the business station. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or black forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.